Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
All right, Cindy Lewis.
Here we go.
Is it burger time?
Yeah, let's talk about what are we going to drink with our hamburgers? So,
we should recap. We're talking about home cooking and putting wine on the table with all kinds of home cooking, giving
and
you
the
ideas.
Fact that the wine and the food actually help each other, and you want them to be a good pairing.
They should be better together than on their own. A good pairing means something is you enjoy it more with its companion than on its own.
Exactly. So hamburgers, what do you think?
Oh, well, I guess the first thing I think of is what is the fat content on the hamburger?
All right, well.
Because the world is trying to buy like the leanest burger meat in the entire world. So that means you'd ratchet the tannin down in your red wine. So.
All right.
If you're buying lean beef to make burgers with. Mm-hmm. And you're not putting a whole lot of sweet stuff like ketchup on them.
You're not putting ketchup or jalapeno peppers on them. You know, let's not go anywhere too far in either direction. So
then if you're buying lean stuff, you don't need a lot of tannin. So I mean, if you're doing it on a budget, in a second, I would drink Dolcetto, which is an Italian red grape that you see from Piemonte. That is like the everyday wine of a lot of Barolo drinkers in Barolo. And you got really good vintages in 2009, 10, 11 in particular. Great Dolcetto.
All right.
If you want to do something that's even brighter, lighter, look for Barbera from the same region. Those are two things I love with burgers. The world is full of, and another Italian grape that does well with that kind of thing is Sangiovese. The world is full of Chianti of a million different types. If you don't have a supplier in a wine shop that you trust to give you a recommendation on that stuff, don't, because about 80% of a Chianti, even Chianti Classico, is not that special, and you're not in a series of good vintages.
So you need a good suggestion.
But if it's an American wine that you're after, it's hard to do that on a budget. I would look for maybe one of the fun little blends from Paso Robles that's Rhone grapes, Syrah, Grenache, Mourvèdre, that kind of thing.
All right. What about pizza? And let's just say it's, you know, just some great crusted cheese pizza with
crusted cheese
some
pizza,
fresh herbs.
Is this delivery pizza or home pizza? Or?
I don't know. What do people do at home? I don't know.
they order. I mean, the world is run. You know, the world has all these delivery places. You know, in every neighborhood, right?
So okay, all right. So delivered pizza.
Delivery pizza is a lot of salt and a lot of sugar in the sauce.
Mm-hmm.
So you need something that's going to be pretty ripe and fruity. That honestly, American's Infidel does really really well with that kind of thing.
That sounds good. Maybe Ridge?
I did. Ridge is a great producer. Ridge is not the cheapest producer,
no.
But it's a great producer.
Beautiful.
The grape that is mostly what is called Zinfandel in the U.S. is Primitivo from the south of Italy. That can be sometimes a better purchase than some of the red Zins that you find in the U.S. So we look for Primitivo from Puglia in particular. The other thing for pizza, honestly, last year's rosé, like some Mediterranean rosé, is really successful. White wine is almost never successful because it doesn't have the acidity.
Sure. Okay.
But if you end up doing something like you're making it at home and it's a lighter sauce or white pizza or something, rosé from a year ago where it's not so fruity is pretty darn successful. It's pretty fun.
I think people from this part of the country make sauerkraut at home. So what would you suggest for sauerkraut?
I suggest a wine from the Mosel.
Very good. Sounds good.
one of those tall German bottles that's green.
Yes.
The brown ones are Rhine wines, and the green ones are Mosel. And one that's not too sweet, so Spätlese, which is moderately sweet, or Cabinet, which is drier. And those are lower alcohol, too, so you can kind of have a couple glasses of that.
All right. Sounds good. And grilled salmon. And now we don't know how are they going to make it?
Well, that's the classic wine shop question. They walk in with salmon in the shopping bag, and it may be, well, I've got Thai spice, or I'm doing salmon with a stir fry, or I'm doing salmon with this fruit salsa, or
sure.
I'm grilling salmon steaks, and I'm doing fried onion rings and mustard sauce, or whatever. Mm-hmm. It seems like when people make salmon at home, it's a relatively fatty fish, and you can get it in an awful lot of grocery stores in decent quality.
That's true.
It will take some kind of a preparation with stronger flavors. That seems to be what people tend to do. So I would say look for pretty big, rich, expressive whites, middle European whites would do really well. A Gewürztraminer from Alsace could be fun. It's a little bit sweet. Inexpensive Pinot Blanc from Alsace, 2010, 2011, 12, all strong vintages. The wines are inexpensive and very tasty, easy. If it's red wine for that kind of thing, I really, really, really like Pinot Noir, not from Burgundy. I like Pinot Noir from Oregon, sometimes West Coast, but the alcohol is kind of high usually on the West Coast stuff, meaning when I say West Coast, obviously Oregon's West Coast, but they're growing regions further inland, and it's a little bit cooler. The alcohols don't tend to get to the 14, 15% range.
Well, and I wonder, you know, also when you're drinking wine at home, are you having something before? So when you are talking about something with a high alcohol content, you know, do you already have something that you've eaten? So you have something in your stomach, so it's not hitting you as hard as well.
Well, it really depends on the outcome you're after, Sin.
Right. Well, okay. Anyway.
How deeply relaxing your meal is going to be.
I don't know. I just like to have food with my wine. Exactly. I don't like to just drink wine. Of course I do just like to drink wine, but I prefer to have the two together. So maybe you're having a little salad with, you know, a goat cheese crouton on it or, you know, something that you, or tomatoes from your garden, something that's, you know, you're having a starter course that you're, you know, you're getting that wine open and enjoying first and then moving on to the salmon.
It's awfully nice to have some kind of a champagne stopper, a sparkling wine stopper is pretty easy to have around.
That's super important.
There's nothing wrong with that ritual of having a little bit of sparkling wine with whatever little snack you start with, whether it be slightly off-dry Prosecco or Cava, which are inexpensive wines that are often good quality from Spain, or a bottle of champagne. There's no reason not to have a little, you know, the day carryover in the fridge of half a bottle of champagne.
It's okay.
Is fine and dandy.
That's
with a good stopper.
That's good to know. Grilled Demonico. Got some recently locally that were just absolutely delicious and grilled them the other night. And
So big fat old-fashioned beef steaks with lots of fat.
Lots of flavor.
There's your excuse for big, tannic, exuberant red wines. Lots and lots of... Depends on the preparation again. I mean, if what you're doing is that steak and it's just like olive oil and fresh chopped rosemary and a little bit of sea salt on the steak, super simple,
and I made a broccoli gratin with mine, so something easy in the oven.
A lot of times with something like that, there is a grape from the south of Italy called Aglianico. That's a grape that's been 3,000 plus years in Italy, came from Greece. You mostly see that. The most famous ones are from Tarazi. That's great for that kind of simple preparation of really rich, fatty beef. Some of the great big sort of fine wines of northern Italy and the like Bordeaux and that sort of thing are not, they're tannic enough, but there's so much oak tannin. It's with a simple preparation like that, I don't love those kinds of wines. Brunello di Montalcino, another great Italian for that sort of a pairing. A good use for big West Coast Cabernet Sauvignon that has plenty of tannin, plenty of oak tannin, and yes, plenty of alcohol, but... Mm-hmm. Not the end of the world in this case for sure, because the dish can carry it.
Absolutely, yeah.
Malbec is a famous pairing for that from Argentina. If you want something that's a little bit less tannic and has been really popular in the culture, there are great Sangiovese vineyard bottlings available of Malbec as well, from Acheval Ferrer, Trapiche, a few different growers.
Let's go in a different direction. Let's try sushi.
That's
a really different direction.
Sushi after steaks is a pretty different direction, that's for darn sure. So sushi, well, it's funny. The first thing I want to do is like break it down into all the details. Mm-hmm. Is it sashimi? Are you talking California rolls? Is it salty? Is it strong? Is it spicy?
Right. Yeah.
There's an awful lot of...
A lot to think about.
The tall, skinny white bottles from Alsace, from Germany, from Austria, from the Alto Adige, that northern part of Italy and the Dolomites. Those are the bottles you go looking for. They do really well with an awful lot of different kinds of sushi. The sweetness level, the richness level, how spicy or expressive you want that wine to be is going to be dependent upon the particular pairings. But those wines do very well with an awful lot of sushi. Also with Thai food as popular as takeout and that sort of thing. And, mm-hmm. and those do well with Thai food as well. I would say that the spicier that it is, the sweeter that you want it to be, and the alcohol a little bit lower.
Okay.
Is sort of first and foremost. So That's the thing to notice with that. The other thing, if you don't want to do a Middle European wine like that with sushi, my little pet thing is the Viognier grape, but from Condrieu, the area, and this is a relatively expensive choice. Condrieu from the Northern Rhone, super successful with sushi, especially pretty sophisticated preparations of sushi.
And if they're making fried chicken at home?
Oh, wow. They're making fried chicken at home. Well, what are they making with the fried chicken?
I think corn on the cob. Let's go in that direction. So fried chicken, corn on the cob, maybe a little mashed potatoes, some green vegetable, maybe peas.
Corn on the cob and fried chicken with a nice crust of breading on it, all I want is great, big, rich California Chardonnay with that kind of thing.
Easy.
Two things that desperately want like oaky California Chardonnay that's big and rich and loaded with fruit are lobster, like big, simple lobster preparations, like a lobster roll that you get up in the mm-hmm. New England area, and any kind of like corn-dominated dish. They do great. But that chicken, especially if it has like a nice peppery crust or something, does really, really well.
Okay. And moving to pasta, you know, you might have red sauce, you might have a meat sauce or a cream-based sauce. How would you handle those three?
Maybe give me a couple of specific preparations and mm-hmm. I'm sort of hitting up for little mini recipes.
Okay. Meat sauce, so maybe ground lamb in the sauce.
So like a lamb ragu.
Exactly.
Some kind of long noodle, that kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
You probably want some kind of a central Italian, maybe a red from Umbria, Sangiovese from Umbria, or maybe even a Sagrantino, if you like reds are a little bit more tannic. But that a pasta with that rich and fatty and strongly flavored sauce, a ragu like that, can handle that kind of thing. They're not crazy expensive, those wines from Umbria, from native grapes.
Let's move towards a cream sauce that maybe, you know, has a little bit of Reggiano in it and pepper and just keep it simple.
So kind of going to the north, you're going to like a Veneto type preparation for a pasta. Maybe this is something that's a bigger, looser piece, or maybe it's a filled pasta or something that has that kind of a sauce. That's what you would typically see. Red wines from the Veneto would certainly work. Valpolicella, they're very good, inexpensive Valpolicella. Brigaldara is a very good one. But there's lots and lots and lots that are out there. Amarone is one of those wines that people love to use, that love great, big, rich, powerful reds. It will crush this kind of a dish. Just because it's from the same area, because the way that it's made is so different. It's made by drying those grapes, and that's why it gets that big, raisiny, fruity flavor. We love it. But I always love it after food. I love it as a contemplation wine a lot more than I like it as just like straight wine. The simpler wine that's much less expensive from that area, that tends to be spicy and bright and interesting, is Valpolicella, and that does really, really well with those kinds of dishes.
And if we did a tomato-based sauce?
Tomatoes, roasted, fresh tomatoes.
Well, let's just go in the direction of roasted tomatoes and basil and good oil and good extra virgin.
An awful
lot
of
garlic, shallot.
Maybe something in the range of what an awful lot of Italian-Americans will call gravy. And something that's a long, slow-cooked and pretty highly seasoned tomato sauce. You want something that's really zesty. I mean, that's the thing that is going to get that done. And that means probably a Southern Italian. That means probably something from Negromaro. It's a grape you see all over the south of Italy that makes sort of sweet and bitter, bright reds that are dense. There's also a Sicilian grape called Nerello Mascalese, and there's some inexpensive versions of that.
Yeah, I was thinking about
really,
those
really
little
well.
Tiny tomatoes from Sicily that are so good. That would be such a great way to make sauce.
No question.
So having a wine from that region would be amazing. Leg of lamb, since we're in that time of year for spring lamb.
Leg of lamb, what else is on the table? Because now while lamb, is it slow roasted? Are you grilling a whole leg? Are you opening
Let's
it up
just
and
say
grilling
it's
it?
Roasted. That would be easier to do at home. And roasted lamb, I would definitely put rosemary on there and maybe some new potatoes, and we could have our peas here and, you know.
So pretty classical
sauce.
And not surprisingly, going in a very like French at home version, right? Who knew? Who knew you love French cooking, Cindy Wolf?
Oh, well, I do.
So, Chateauneuf would be a fancy way to deal with that really nicely. You need decent tannin, but not giant tannin. You want something that's a little bit fruity to end at time with the rosemary very easily. But the lamb really is the thing, and nothing else is dominant in that situation.
Yeah, it's such a strong flavor.
Lamb has a strong flavor.
Flavor, but strong.
You need something with a lot of expression, a lot of strength, and honestly a fruity flavor. There's a reason that we like mint and jelly with lamb. There's a reason, like with, you know, like wild duck, you want some kind of a fruit. People associate duck with fruit.
Right.
They think of wild duck with fruit, because that wild duck can be strong. In that situation, you want something that has some power to it. That is also a good spot for Barolo Barbaresco. The less expensive version of Chateauneuf, look for a village called Lirac, L-I-R-A-C, which is right across the river from Chateauneuf du Pape. Look for Rasteau, R-A-S-T-E-A-U, which is another great big Grenache-based wine from the south of France.
You know, and also when I cook lamb, I always I really think I've gotten to the point where I just prefer a leg of lamb cooked to medium, much more so than medium rare. I just think it's it just realizes its flavor and it has a better texture. So that would be a suggestion I have.
I think, well, people with lamb, the size of the lamb leg is a big deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's really...
Well, and is it on the bone or is it bone rolled and tied, which is industry term, you know, where it is deboned. And then they either put it in jet netting or in twine, make a roast for you.
I recall having lamb with you, going on a lamb tangent. Mm-hmm. I recall having lamb with you baked in clay in the style of the southwest of France in a very fancy restaurant in France. And the lamb baked in the clay was this tiny, tiny, tiny little shoulder of something that was maybe, you know, 10, 12 weeks old,
yeah.
A little tiny lamb. That lamb that had to be cooked until just about well done to realize its flavor.
Yes, that's right. It really did. And it was as tender. It was one of the first times I was so disappointed when we cut into that lamb and realized it was cooked all the way through. But once I ate it, I was no longer disappointed because it really was spectacular. So I do think it's a good point that you may actually want, if you are, like I prefer to eat my beef rare, but when it comes to lamb and duck, for that matter, duck, magret in particular, I almost prefer that more medium as well.
I think it's really, the lesson to me was in sort of cooking to texture, cooking to taste and texture, not
exactly.
Worrying about the color of something. The experienced grill cook, when you see them in the restaurant, they don't slice into a steak to see that they got the temperature correct. They actually just touch it.
Mm-hmm.
You touch it with your finger to see what the texture of it is at that moment. That tells you what's going on with that. And I think that's the same with lamb especially. I think that's the same thing. The older the animal,
mm-hmm.
the less you're going to need to cook it to get the texture right, and the more danger there is in overcooking it and getting that tough lamb that has that strong flavor from its
fat
people don't like.
Yeah, you wouldn't like it. That's why if people don't like lamb, I sometimes think it's because it's been overcooked, and that's why they didn't like it, because lamb is one of the best things. All right, so people make meatloaf at home. What would you eat with meatloaf? Let's say one that was made with ketchup, which is how... I know.
I think we may have to save meatloaf for the
okay.
next segment.
No meatloaf.
When you come back to Formidable on Food and Wine, Cindy's going to give me all the difficult meatloaf questions she possibly can.
Okay. I can come up with a few.
On Food and Wine Pairing 101 on Formidable on Food and Wine.